want to feel.
And he already has the vibes. Just saying. It's on.
Sorry.
Thanks.
I was just goofing around.
It was great until you scared everybody with your microphone sounds.
Way to go. All
right, so we're going to be recording this.
What do you think you're doing, buddy?
So we're going to be recording this. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Mike Lineman at all. But I think a lot of these questions will end up on Gathering Magic, so I'm hoping to transcribe it and get it up there for everybody to see.
Oh, okay, so you're not just going to send him the...
Maybe that's a good idea. I could just send him the audio file and make him do all the
hi, Mike.
Of transcribing it.
We're talking about you, Mike.
We have more people. This is super exciting. Obviously, nobody wants to sit next to Aaron, so.
I think it's the giant suitcase.
I don't know what's in it, but I'm moving it.
Looks like something.
What time did you guys get here?
Yesterday?
Yeah.
About 7.
I should have done that.
Alright, so.
Yeah, really?
Alright, everybody, welcome to the first artist panel of a GP that I know of. My name's April. I'm going to be moderating the panel. We have 7 amazing magic artists here with us today. I was thinking maybe as a way for all of you to introduce yourself to the audience, we could go down the line and you could say your name and like maybe the cards that people come up to ask you to sign the most. That way we know who exactly you are. You want to start us off, Jeff?
No, but I will.
Okay.
I'm Jeff Maricola. I've been doing artwork for Magic since 1995. Cards that people have me sign most of. Probably right now, Metamorphos, Propaganda, and my Beatles are always popular. So, so that's about it.
I'm Dan Scott. I've been doing art for Magic since 2004. And Ponder's probably the most famous card that I've done. But of the recent sets, Jeskai Ascendancy is pretty popular right now, possibly getting banned soon. cross fingers. And then I just did Duretti, the Planeswalker, so I was pretty excited to get my first Planeswalker, so, yeah.
Awesome. I'm Jim Pavlik. I've been working for Magic for about 8 years. Say Mirror Weave and Denizen of the Deep.
I'm Marco Neller. I'm pretty new. I've only been doing this for about 2 years, I think maybe 3. So I don't really know what my most popular card is yet. But I did do a Tangle Wire, which seems to be pretty popular, just based on how OP the card is. And I don't know which one's the most popular, because I get random ones every now and then. So I guess we'll see.
I'm Aaron Miller. I'm new as well. I started with Theros. Let's see, my most popular card.
They're all so popular.
Johnny. So a Johnny. Probably Chain to the Rocks and Blood Soaked Champion right now seems to be a big deal.
I'm Winona Nelson, and I started with the Innistrad block, so about 5 years ago. And my most popular one by far is Voice of Resurgence.
I'm Anthony Palumbo, and I started about 5 years ago, and my most popular is probably Sarah Ascendant.
Excellent. So we're here at a GP, and you know, the lines are around the block to have you guys do card alters. It's the bread and butter. So I'm curious, What is the strangest card alter request that you have gotten? Anything strange or super weird? Anything you've had to turn down?
Name a body part.
I had one that was really confusing that would have been funny if I understood the guy, but this was in Japan, and he didn't speak any English, and he just like said one word. He handed me a voice of resurgence, and he said, salad. And I didn't do a salad because I was like, I'm sure that is not the word that he means to say. But afterwards, I was like, actually, that would have been really funny. So that's the strangest one I didn't do.
Strange.
So most, I would say most Magic players, as a Magic player myself, identify with like a particular color, like, you know, I'm a blue mage or I'm a red mage or something along those lines. When you get your art descriptions, is there like a color that you're always hoping comes in? You're like, yes, I get to paint a white card. Or do you not care? Do you
it's paint really, it? I just get to paint a card. They called me again, thank God.
I don't know if I'm having like bad luck or good luck, but I seem to just by default get handed green cards. And they're usually of like elementals. So I guess that's where my niche kind of is. But yeah, I'm a green guy.
I've done a lot of white.
A lot of white?
A lot of white. Black.
I like doing black.
I like doing black?
Yeah. As a player, I enter with blue, but as an artist, I enter with black, just because, you know, all the rules kind of go out the window. You can just kind of go crazy and make something as crazy and demented as you want. So.
Yeah, black is my favorite as well. Yeah.
Interesting. So like you said you played Magic. Do any of the rest of you play Magic at all?
I dabble every now and then.
Just starting to learn.
Yeah, I've played.
After all this time.
Do you ever sit down to build a deck and like, I'm gonna build a Jeff Mercola deck. This is all cards that I did.
Well, I haven't gotten to the point yet of trying to build that kind of a deck, no. We learned at GP of Portland, the judges taught Aaron and I how to play. And since then I've played a couple games with my son who I, you know, at the GP they gave us a bunch of like a box of cards, right? They gave us all this stuff and I got home and I give that to my son and he like disappears with it across the street. Back like an hour later, he's like, okay, we know how to play. It's like been 20 years for me. So, yeah, he's already really good at it. Catch up to.
Talking about building a deck from your cards, I heard Chris Moeller did that.
Yeah, he's got one all of his own. He had to ask the art director to give him land cards so that he could finish out his deck.
I think, isn't it like Kent Walker's like close to creating a cube?
Yeah, he's like just like 20 cards off from a cube, I believe.
I'm the one that started as a player, though, so I know the game pretty well, and I'd like to do that sometime, actually build a deck from my cards. I've done, like, over 150 cards now, so I should have a
should be able. There's got to be a decent deck in there somewhere. It probably has Jeskai Ascendancy and Ponder.
Probably,
so.
Yeah. It's got to be based around those colors, for sure. All
right, so have any of you ever had, like, an art description that, like, you really struggled with or you just didn't want to do? And I'm looking at Jim Pavelic here because he did like pulling teeth, which to me is like just makes my stomach churn. So like when you get a description like that, do you think?
Well, that's my favorite stuff to do, so I was all excited when I got that. And the sketch I sent in for that was actually too gross. It's gross.
It's too gross.
What I painted. So Jeremy was like, oh, that's a little too much. You gotta dial that back. So yeah, and then they almost still didn't print it because it was a little too gross. But they just made it under the wire. So I like that stuff, so that's not a problem for me. But if I got something that was all bunny rabbits and cutesy stuff, I'd be like, oh boy, that's no good.
I'll say as a new guy, like, and especially as a guy who's not really an illustrator, like I didn't illustrate until Magic. I just did like pure concept art before then. Some of the descriptions that we get, like from a guy who's never done it, it's like, well, I don't even understand how to do that. So when I first got, I think the most like, interesting and complicated one that I ever did was like Tangle Wire, because there's a lot going on there. It's like, I want you to draw a picture of a guy made out of wires, but his face is another guy's face, and then the guy who's below him needs to have his face, except it's not really his face anymore. And I'm just like, wait, I'm tangled up. So the first one that I did, actually, I took a stab at it, and it actually got shot down. Like, I had to completely redo the card, that was like the third card that I had ever done from like never doing cards, and it was pretty complicated.
I'm scared of doing any that have fire in them because I think fire's something I struggle with painting, and I've done like five cards that are like a man made out of fire. I don't know why, because I always feel like I blow it so hard on this.
They always seem to find exactly what you aren't strong with and then give that to you. Because I asked Jeremy the same thing. I'm like, why do you keep giving me plants? I suck at plants. He's like, no, you're doing fine. Meanwhile, I'm staying up until like 3 in the morning. Plants, I'm tired of plants.
I don't know what's up with you guys. I don't have any problems.
Yeah, I feel
they
the
just
same
keep
way.
Asking me for beautiful characters, and I'm like, that's all I want to do. So, and giant cats, those are fun.
I still think they're feeling me out. I've got cards coming out that are not anything I've done before. Like one just got spoiled yesterday. I did my first weapon, so that felt a little odd. But everyone is like, whatever, it's a challenge. Let me see where I can take this.
So is it just a weapon, or is it like a weapon on?
It's an artifact, so it's just sitting there. And that's what they wanted, sitting in a rack or something like that. So I had to make it cool. So it's like,
oh. It does seem like a bit of a challenge when like, it's hard to like get something like, I have to imagine it's difficult to get something like an artifact that's just very static. You know,
right.
It can be like super dynamic like in a game like Magic.
The opposite is also bad. I got Whip of Erebos or Eberos or whatever, and like the description is like, we want a whip. It needs to be the size of a mountain. The actual whip part needs to extend forever into eternity. And
what?
I've never known how hard a straight line was to draw. Because it's like, it needs to be a straight line that's like this width in the foreground and receding perfectly all the way to like this whip and like snaking like a snake. And then the killer part was is that in that whip you have to also have the galaxy.
Oh, right.
So it's like, how do you put a galaxy in a whip? But yeah, it turned out pretty good, I think.
Maybe they just have more confidence in you guys.
I don't know why.
Can you draw a shirtless dude? And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I think any of the ones that aren't characters can be a little bit more difficult, like the artifacts and stuff like that. Like I did one called Increasing Confusion, which was just a bunch of books and beakers and stuff that were like flying off the shelf and bursting. And that was a nightmare to do, just drawing books and pages flying all over.
That does sound confusing.
Yeah.
All right, so many of you, I think all of you except for Aaron here, have done a remake of somebody else's art. So like, I think Jeff, you did Mana Barbs, and we've got...
Right, Mana Barbs.
Good. Two of you did Blightning. Winona did Elvish Mystic, you Pything Needle.
A couple of us have done each other's. I did a promo of Tony's, and Dan did... You did a promo of one of mine, right?
Oh, Prophet. Was that the mage?
Somebody told me you did Prophet of Krufix promo.
Oh.
Maybe he was misinformed.
I don't think so.
Could be.
I think, did someone do Repeal though? Is that Anthony or?
That was Dave Plumbo.
Oh, Dave Plumbo, okay.
Yeah.
So many of you have done remakes of somebody else's art. So is it really daunting? Like, how does it change your creative process when you have to, you know, you get an art description. Is it really tempting to go and look at the other art and be like, okay, I've got to do this, but way just way better, or like, do you not even care?
I think they took advantage of me early on, not telling me. They took advantage of the fact that I didn't know how to play the game or didn't know the game by not telling me that there was previous art. So I never got to see the previous art for some of the stuff that I'd done.
They don't usually tell you when. There is previous art. I didn't know for Elvish Mystic either, but I knew for Resolute Archangel because Tony did it.
Right.
So that was a special kind of stress because I was like, well, I got to make it better than his, but not better than his.
Sometimes I think they commission them at the same time too. Like I think maybe Fathom Mage was commissioned by two different artists at the same time when they're doing the promo version, the regular version.
Sure. Are all promo versions a version that is also going to be another card?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I recently did a promo for one of my own cards, and I think that he told me that I was one of the only artists they've ever let do a promo of their only card, but And I don't think it wasn't like a special privilege. It was just, they love giving me those greens and vegetables. It was literally, I did this guy, and then 2 days later, they're like, okay, we also want you to do the promo of that. And I was just like, stop giving me greens. For the most part, though, they actually don't tell you, and it's kind of sneaky, because when I did Tangle Wire, I got the description. I was like, this is kind of weird. Okay, fine. And I did it, and, you know, I did the job that I could do on it. But then later, somebody was like, you did Tangle Wire? And I was like, what's Tangle Wire? And they were like, well, I don't even know what it is. And I think before that, I had two, which was Croce's Charm and Dromar's Charm, which they did give me the art for those in the actual email. And for some reason, I just could not get past how hard that was to, like, he's like, redo it. I was like, it's right there. Take it and put it on.
They don't show you.
It's very much better.
I'll have a promo next year.
You will have a promo next year. Yeah. All right. So the next time we have this panel, I will definitely ask you what it was like.
Oh, well, I had no idea. They did not send me any art.
Personally, I love doing the reprints, though, because if they give you a reprint, it's going to be a playable card, you know? Like, they reprinted Ponder. I got to do that. And when I did that, I knew I was doing the art for a card that's going to be played in. It's going to be a staple in a lot of decks. So I was excited, because if a card is playable, then more people are going to see your art. It's going to get more attention, you know? You could do the most beautiful piece of art, but if it's on a card that's unplayable, no one's going to see it, so.
Yeah, a reprint and a promo are different in that respect, because promos, you don't always know how they are in game, but a reprint is obviously a popular card.
Sure. Speaking of that, like, I assume all of you have probably done at least one art where you're like, oh man, I've really crushed this art, this is incredible, only to find end up on, like, a common card that, like, no one ever played. Does that ever bother you to find, like, some of your incredible pieces of art, like, just get ignored by Magic users?
No, but the inverse does. Having a card which you don't know is going to be awesome, and then you're like slammed with other deadlines, and you do it, but you don't really know. You're like, oh, it's just a rat. And then later, you find out that it's like the biggest rat in the world. People like, it, that happened on one that was also a reprint, and people were like, I hate this. It's hard, like, seeing them right next to each other, especially when you Google search them, and like, it's yours, and then it's like, that's my card. Oh, wait, that one's way better. Whoops.
Yeah, I did a piece that I didn't know was going to be a giant size promo card, and it's probably the worst painting I've ever done. And then they gave it to Ultra Pro, and it was on packaging, and it was everywhere, and I was like, oh, if I have to see that painting again, I'm going to shoot myself. Yeah, that is the worst.
I guess the cool thing about that, though, is that I guess sometimes the paintings that you feel are your worst paintings actually kind of, in a certain light, are your best ones.
No, this one just...
I've seen a few that, like, some people hated, and I was like, that card is just awesome. That is a super awesome card. I think a lot of times we hate them because they don't feel like something that we would normally do. Like, I have a thing that I always paint if people give me that. They're like... you know, if I paint on my own time, I'm always going to paint this one thing. And then I paint this other thing, and I hate it, but it's actually way better because it's sort of outside my comfort zone, which is where the magic happens, I guess. So, I don't know, man. I think it's probably a pretty kick-ass color.
Wait till you see it.
All right, so Jeff, you've been around for a very long time. I mean, I'm not saying you're old or anything, but, like...
Yeah, that's true.
So... Many, many years ago when Magic was very new, like, art descriptions were incredibly vague. Sometimes they had just, like, the name of the card.
Yep. Which changed.
Yeah, which got changed. It was madness in early Magic. Yep. So, like, you've been around and seen the change in art descriptions as the years have gone on.
Yep.
Do you prefer, like, the classic open-ended Magic experience where it's, like, paint a unicorn? Or would you prefer, or do you guys prefer, like, you know, the new descriptions where you have, like, style guides and you have long descriptions and everything else?
I think both for different reasons. Just because I like the open-ended stuff in the beginning because you could just do whatever you wanted and have a lot of fun. So the artist in me says yes to that, but the business person in me says that the current stuff is better because it keeps people on point. There's a brand now. There's a look. Feel to the game now. establish a brand look. That's important in this day and age. So, so I prefer both. I think if you give artists too much freedom, then everything's going to go off the rails. So keeping people on point with the style guide is important. It has been interesting though to see it go over the years from just all they gave you was just like a color, a name, and said do what the heck you wanted, and then to how intense those style guides get now. You know,
I feel like one of the recent things that's sort of changed a little bit that sort of lets you have open-endedness, but also lets you have freedom is the introduction of the word could. Because now in the descriptions, it seems like they'll give you a really long description and then they'll say, this is what it could be. Like, you could draw this, and then it's like kind of easy to do that, and then if you don't hit that, you can kind of deviate and go this way.
They do a really great job of giving you a description that inspires you instead of confining you. You know, it doesn't tell you like, you know, draw this guy with a staff in his right hand and on this side, like, it doesn't get into actual, like, perspective and the details of what the painting's going to look like, just kind of a vague idea of what, you know, the feel of it is. And then they got a style guide to kind of, you know, give you some guidance there, but they don't, they're not real strict about, you know, dictating what it needs to look like exactly. I feel like they've got a good middle ground on that.
So Jeff mentioned, you know, Magic having a particular branded look. What do you guys feel separates magic art, like, from just generic fantasy art?
Well, I think one of the things that we do is we don't hit those generic fantasy things the same way. And we try and take them with a little bit of a twist, or some of those things are just not present. You know, like the knight on the horse with the castle in the background. Like, that's just not going to be a magic art. Those worlds are going to be a little more severe, a little darker. You don't really know who's the good guy and who's the bad guy.
They have, in the style guides, they have like a overall, this is what the magic brand needs to have, introduction part of it. And it says specifically, this isn't a land of wizards and pointy hats. This is mage punk. And so, yeah, they give you kind of a specific introduction to keep in mind that, you know, 15-year-olds have to think it's cool.
You know, as the years have gone on, you know, magic art has become like just this like gigantic behemoth that like looms over the fantasy art world. Like, there's annual awards like Spectrum where like magic just continues to swallow a larger and larger piece of the pie of awards that go out. And that's continued as the years have gone on. What do you think is the future of magic art? From where do we go from here? I know that's kind of an open-ended question.
I think that has a lot to do with what other companies do, because the thing to me that's made magic stand out is that nobody else like rewards the artists for that quality in the same way. So nobody else, it's just not the priority to other card games and stuff like that to be the best art. So if somebody else comes along and does that, it would push magic to maybe do something else.
I think most other properties, they're more concerned with their brand. Like, if you're doing something for World of Warcraft, it has to look like World of Warcraft. If you're doing something for Warhammer 40K, it has to look like the Warhammer 40K universe. They have a very specific look. And with Magic, they're more about the artists. Like, they hire good artists, and then they let them do their thing. So I think that's why a lot of the art, you know, wins awards, because the artists have the freedom to, you know, do something really cool without having someone, you know, over art direct them.
Magic also, the way that they reward the artists financially is better than any other of the card game companies and most other art companies at all, because you retain the rights to be able to sell prints and do original artworks with those characters in it and things like that, which having done work for Warhammer, like even submitting Warhammer work to Spectrum is technically not allowed because they don't want Warhammer Work to appear somewhere that doesn't say Games Workshop on it. So I've broken that rule a lot of times, but that's just because they're in the UK and I kind of think they won't find out. But I've never had them turn around and say that that I shouldn't have done that. I actually had the art director there tell me to just that he was going to pretend I hadn't asked him and just do it. So. Yeah, and I mean, if you can't even submit a Warhammer piece to Spectrum, you're not going to win a Spectrum Award with it.
Sure.
And you're not, you might not really put as much energy into something that you know that you're not going to have any kind of ownership over. I think there's definitely, like, when you're doing Magic, you feel more like this is a company that's giving back to you also.
Speaking of the ownership of Magic art, those of us who follow like the secondary Magic art market, where like original paintings are sold, over the last year prices have gone truly, truly insane, with multiple pieces going for over $10,000, including one by the esteemed Aaron Miller right in front of us.
No, that wasn't me.
That was not you?
No, the highest was six.
Was it six? Okay. Yeah. I apologize.
That's okay.
Know, man, that's,
just give me a month.
That's really
good. give me a month, I might change that.
So as prices have gone up, has that caused any of you to reconsider the way that you do Magic art or your choice of media?
Well, shit. I mean, I didn't know that, so everything changes now. I think there is a it's interesting. Like, me being here on the first for those of you who don't know, I come from like video games, like I do games, and they don't want their artists to do anything. So
anything
outside of that, and they don't want you to put your name on anything, and they don't want people to know you did stuff. And any piece of artwork you did is not going to come out for like 5 years when the game comes out, and even then, like, you can only show like maybe.
They're
going to
say this is from Blizzard, not this is from.
Yeah. Well, even with that, like, for example, I work on Injustice, Gods Among Us, which is a fighting game, and creating characters, I did like 20 versions of like this character named Cyborg from the DC Universe, and I wanted to show all of them because like that was like 3 or 4 months of work that I did, and I went to show them after the game was out 3 years later, and they were like, you can't show any of those because all of them are different than the one that's in the game. And I'm like, well, I'm a concept artist. They're all going to be different. And they're like, no, you can't show them. You can't put them on your website. You can't do anything like that. So, like, hearing these stories about how we're allowed to be more, like, have more ownership in what we do. Like, I'm inspired sitting right here. I want to go do some more Magic cards. I might walk out of my job tomorrow. I'm not even joking. Like, you guys, I'm about to pick the phone up right now and call my boss and, like, walk out of there.
As a 100% digital artist, I definitely, it makes me, I started off as a traditional artist, and it makes me want to pick up the paints again and produce some original art. I mean, first of all, I really enjoy the look and feel of oil paints, and having something tangible that you can hold in front of you, you know, hold up and say, I did this, instead of just something, you know, digital, is really cool. But then also the resale value, getting, you know, extra income from that is not a bad, you know, benefit too.
Do you lie awake at night and think, oh man, Ponder, I wonder how much Ponder would be on eBay?
Yeah.
Well, I do both digital and traditional, and the struggle is making sure that the art directors are happy, because there's, you know, there can be a difference, and if I'm not making them happy with my paintings, then it just makes it harder to keep making paintings, no matter how much I want to paint. So right now, the idea is to paint and then have that as my first digital layer if I have to. And if I don't, then good. Like, I just finished one where I struggled. I did this painting and I felt good about it. And then it just wasn't right. And it doesn't look anything like the one that's going to be printed, except you can see the bones of it. But I had to fix it. And I'm happier with the final illustration, even though
digital version.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, like stretching and moving painted pieces. So it's still going to be this really cool illustration, just the actual painting isn't going to look like the card now. And I couldn't just make a few changes. It's a lot of changes, but it was worth it. And it's just going to take that time until the drawing and the concept are all nailed down before I even pick up the brush, to where those paintings are just going to stay the same. You know, that's just my struggle as I'm learning to paint better.
I never made that jump from traditional to digital for my fantasy art. I've stuck with traditional since I started. I do digital for like my children's book clients, but for any of my fantasy art has always been painted because I like the smell of oil paints.
I thought Manabarb's was digital. Is that not the case?
No, I submitted a digital sketch for that, but then and the sketch was so detailed for that. So that took me like 4 or 5 days, you know. So I was like, okay. So yeah, everything's been traditional. I enjoy it too much. I like working that way, you know. I mean, I love the digital stuff that these guys do. It's just so amazing. There's something about paint. Just can't get away from it.
So I own a number of original paintings, and one of the things that I always like to do is, like, you know, take the card and kind of hold it up to the painting. And what often strikes me is like how different they look, like how much they shift the colors, or the contrast is like super amped up on the car where it wasn't on the painting. Like, does that ever make you guys a little crazy? Do you think Wizards is very true to like your original view, like your original vision of how you painted the card?
I think they are for me. I send everything in as a digital file, even if painting is an oil painting, I take the photo of it and send them that so they don't ever tweak it to something different from what I sent. Maybe if somebody sends them an original art, they have their photographer do it and it comes out differently. But I don't think that they change things
a little bit.
Do they really?
Yeah, like deployed to the front, they printed a lot darker than the art that I created. You know, it might have felt a little washed out. I feel like they went a little overboard, and it feels really dark now.
I think almost all of them print a little bit dark, so
right.
I kind of try to work around that.
Oh,
but generally,
you're...
I don't even look at the printed card because I don't expect it to look the same as the painting.
I think Tangle Wire for me was like... It was only printed in foil, I guess, and that came out super, super dark. There's been a big difference recently, though, since, I don't know if you guys got it, but there's an email sent out maybe like 3 or 4 months ago about artist profiles, about how they're like changing the way they're doing color. So I think they may have noticed that, and they just sort of changed that, but mine definitely always print way darker than I do.
Yeah, I've had quite a few come out much darker than the actual painting. And that, it bothers you a little, you know, because I spent time getting certain colors into the shadows, and then those all just go to like a black, and it really flattens things out. But, you know, for the most part, it's close enough.
As a digital artist, it can be sometimes hard too, because the RGB color space digitally is a lot wider. The gamut is wider than a printed piece, so purples and cyans and stuff like that, where that might look really vibrant on screen, when they get printed, they can look completely different. They can dull out a lot. So,
I'm curious, have any of you ever, you know, spent a bunch of time working on a piece, sent it in to whoever the art director is at the time, I think it's Jeremy Jarvis currently, and had them say, no, this isn't going to work. What is that like? Do any of you have any like interesting stories behind rejections?
I had to redo my Johnny piece because he didn't like the description that I had gotten. So I had to redo it. So that was stressful.
Like they didn't like the description that they sent you?
Right. Like, because I started doing all these drawings and sending them in, and he's just like, oh, this is just not good. This is not working. So let me rework this description. And it just got simple. It was just like, just make them look awesome on a field or something. Just make them look tough, and we'll go from there. And that made things easy, because the other one was just too complicated.
I am the opposite. He never likes anything I do.
Really? I just sent it in, proved, go.
No,
proved, go.
It's weird hearing you guys say that you talk to him, because he never talks to me. He's just like, Marco. But one time, though, there was one time when I've actually gotten actual words out of Jeremy, and it's when I turned in the frilled Oculus one, and he loved that one. And he sent me this long email. He just exploded, and I was like, "Whoa, this is what it's like." But the rest of them, yeah, I've had a few.
It's
of
what
them.
It's like to be loved.
Yeah, I've had a few. It's also a lot of stress because that was one of my earlier cards, and I've never done one that good. I guess
that was so long ago. Why do I have to keep being compared to that one card?
Yeah, I guess. Well, that's kind of cool though, because in the world of magic, I guess you're known by your best work instead of by your worst.
Well, in-house, it's different.
In-house. Yeah.
In-house is different than what you guys. You guys love everything that may not be loved other places. So.
I've had three cards over the years rejected. For the art, there's been others that you turn in and they get rejected. That has nothing to do with your art. It's like the card gets killed or whatever, you know, and it just goes into what they call the morgue, where they hold it and it might appear. It's
kind of a grim name.
Yeah, it might appear again someday, but I've had three cards rejected because the art was crap, and I'm so glad that they got rejected, because it's one of those things you just don't want out there. You know, same situation where you're rushed, deadlines, you know, you got to do a painting in a day, you need a deadline or something, and then it gets rejected, and then just a sigh of relief.
How many cards have you had, though?
Over 110.
100 and something, right?
Yeah.
And you've only gotten three rejected?
Mm-hmm.
He's just that good.
Okay. Yeah, I need that doesn't add up.
Yeah, I realize that most of my work has been like in you know, the earlier days. Where if I had to be working today on Magic, no way, I'd get everything rejected. It was easier to get crap through back then.
So. I think compared to your record, I've done six cards and had five rejected. No, I'm kidding. I think I've had one that was rejected and it was not good. I think they just completely killed the card out of Magic. Like, this card is so bad. We're not even going to show. This card just doesn't even exist anymore.
When you guys say rejected, you mean it was re-signed to another artist, or did they have to, like, I mean, well, did they make you start over from scratch? Or?
No, okay. So they have a couple things. And like Noni was saying, they're really good with their artists, like the way they compensate you. So, like, I had one that was sort of, I had what you had, the description that they gave me. I worked and worked and worked on that, and then later he was like, you know what, I'm changing the description. But they still compensated me for the other work that I had done.
Yeah,
when they make you change stuff, they pay you again.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Nice. But I did have one that was like this glowing guy pushing a rock up a hill or something, and it just, I worked on it, and then I was late on it because I worked on it so hard and I just wasn't getting it. And then he was like, you know, we're just going to have to kill it. And then they just totally, completely killed it. I never heard about that card again. That's the card that shall not be named. Like, we don't even speak about that card.
I've had more issues with Magic brand than I have with the art directors. I feel like the art directors are really good about not saying something unless it's something really obvious that they can help you with. Like if Jeremy or Don Muren's the other art director, if they say something, it's usually, you know, true. So, but Magic brand, they'll come back to you for, you know, something that's too gory or showing too much side boob or whatever, you know. I get a lot more issues with that.
There's too much side boob. I did not realize that was a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, they're pretty strict on that. Like, originally for Tanglewire, she had on, it was just like a low-cut thing, and I guess from the position that she was in, they were like, no side butt. I guess that's the thing. But yeah, they're pretty complicated on that. I mean, they're pretty like strict on that, which is good, which is really good. because there are other card companies that are out now, which I shall not name, at Libot.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Those guys over in Japan.
Make your boobs bigger. Yeah. No, bigger. No, no, no. Bigger.
I did one for...
Wizard would like to include more women in this process and get more women involved in the game, you know, and that's not the way to do it. So,
yeah, I know that as a female Magic player myself, that's one of the things I appreciate the most about Magic is that they're very tactful about like how they present women in Magic card arts.
Yeah.
It's really great. All right, so like one last question and then we'll open it up to the audience because I think we have about 10 minutes left. Do any of you have a Magic artist hero? Is there an artist you think, oh god, man, someday if I could only paint like Noah Bradley?
Nope.
Not Noah Bradley. Maybe not Noah Bradley.
Oh, did I say that out loud?
Really?
For me,
it was just a name. It was just a random.
That name?
I'd say probably Kev Walker. Kev Walker for me. Just because, well, I think. I don't know if he's done the most cards for Magic, but pretty close if not.
So.
But he was doing art for the cards back when I used to be a player, and he was always my favorite artist. I just love his style. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily anything like him. I work digitally. He works traditionally. But he's just been my favorite artist forever. So.
He has a very distinct style. Like, you can just look at any Kevin Walker art and know it's him.
Yeah.
I would say for me, it's Mark Zug. I just think he does everything the way I wish I could. He's just amazing.
We have just one?
Well, you can have multiple, I suppose. Yeah.
How about you,
Mark? Jim Murray for me.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Jim Murray, wherever you are right now.
He is. And he's so, like, he's. I love. Is it Cormac or Cromac?
Cormac.
So many K's and R's and M's. I love his stuff, and it's so, like, realistic and good. For some reason, the Jim Murrays just really drive me insane because they're like not afraid to like push that anatomy like really far out there and stuff. And the colors are always great, and it just seems so effortless. So yeah, wherever he's at, it's my dude.
Rest in peace, Jim Murray.
Yeah. Oh,
he's not actually dead. It's
natural. God, let's see, Donato, Jesper Ising. Is that how you say his name?
Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
Steve Prescott.
It is.
Chris Ron. Yeah, a lot of the painter dudes, really. Like.
Oh, maybe it was Chris Ron that had the $10,000 piece. That might be what I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
A couple of them.
my favorite.
A couple of them. Not jealous, just a matter of fact.
I love Rebecca Gay and Therese Nielsen. Mm-hmm. They're my jam. My work doesn't look like theirs at all, but it's the sort of the feeling and emotion that I love in their work.
I'm also a Comark fan, and there's an artist, Carla Ortiz, who
Carla.
They're so good.
Carla and Carl, Carl Kapinski.
She doesn't have time to do magic. But yeah,
do we hear from you, Jeff? Are you your own hero?
Pretty much everything they said.
Okay.
I'd say the top of my list is probably Kev Walker and Jim Murray as well.
Sure.
I did find it interesting, though, that most of the people mentioned are traditional artists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll throw a digital one, Cynthia Shepherd.
She's just phenomenal work too. Yeah. All right, so let's open it up to questions from the audience. Anybody have any questions they'd like to ask the artists? All right, I think you.
I just had a quick question. How does an artist come to have a relationship with Magic? I mean, are you recruited? Do you submit work?
I stalked the art director at conventions.
Stalking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Through much rejection, I think I may have had 10 pieces rejected.
Did you send voluntarily?
Yeah. They just they don't say a word. They just like give you the email address and they let you send the work, and then they're like, nope. And I think I tried 10 pieces before they actually said that I could do one.
Yeah, it took like three years. So 3 years.
Just sending stuff in.
Well, talking to art directors, showing them the book, working. You know, finally work. They like they'll have a D&D and a Magic at the same time. So the D&D's like, yeah, I'll hire you. So I was like, oh, I'm kind of in. But I really wasn't. So it still took a lot more.
So did any of you come to it because they had known of other work you were doing and they approached you? It's always you approaching them. Okay.
Yeah. For me, I submitted to the Art Drop email or whatever and really didn't get any feedback there. So I actually got the art director's email address. Like I found out what the what the convention was, like first name dot, last name at wizards.com. And I found out the name of the art director, and so I plugged it in and sent directly to him, and I think it got rejected the first two times I submitted to him that way, but the third time, he happened to like whatever I sent in, and started working for him, and I've been working for him ever since then. So.
I have been working with Wizards of the Coast on another game of theirs back in the day, and the art director that I worked with on that game, it's just a role-playing game, she became the art director on Magic, and when she did that, she brought me over to it. So that's another way to get in, too, is to kind of work with the company on maybe another product or on something else that isn't their big dog, you know, and then they see that you're a professional illustrator, that you can meet deadlines, that you're respectful, you communicate well, and then...
I'm not an artist at all.
Yeah.
Here's talking your story.
Yeah.
I'm just curious how many worked on D&D before they worked on Magic. I did.
For the record, for the transcript, four of the artists raised their hand. Next question.
I was wondering how you guys feel when you're commissioned like a vertical piece. For example, when you have Chandra, which is a small piece, or again, you have the promo of Fathom Age, but if only like a tiny portion of it is used, and that doesn't appear anywhere else in Magic Art except for promotional items.
They tell you how much of it is going to be covered. Sometimes they give you a template of where the card design is going to be. So like when you have a full, they call it a full art card when it's tall, and they'll send you the template for that to show you like these are the parts that are going to be covered up. So like you have art there, but you don't put the important parts there.
And when you do card art, almost all of it is horizontal. So to get a vertical piece is kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's fun to get something different. I've actually done pieces that were square, even though it's going to be a horizontal card, just to give me a different aspect ratio. Even though I knew it was going to get cut off and it wasn't ever going to get used, I just did it because I thought it'd be a better painting. So.
Yeah, that's same here. I've done plenty of paintings where I know they're just going to be a horizontal card. I do it vertically just for my own, you know, benefit, because after a while, after doing so many pieces of art like this, you get sick of working in that format.
Yeah.
And so make it more exciting for myself. I'll just make it tall like this, but I know that this portion is the only portion that's going to be used. But then the benefit of that is then when the collectors come around to buy paintings, they go, oh my goodness, I had no idea there was this much more to it, you know? And of course, bigger painting means bigger price too.
I find it almost completely impossible to paint horizontally, and that's all I've ever gotten. It's so complicated, man. Some of the things they ask you to do like horizontally, it's so hard. Like I got the one, what is it? The jungle elemental, and they're like, we need to show that he's a tree. He's a freaking tree, and it's like a horizontal thing. And it's like, how do you show a tree? So, of course, I just defaulted to the only thing that I knew, and I made this tree guy like sitting in his chair. So it's like, but it was like so hard to do. Like it's I don't understand. I still haven't got much.
Yeah,
but then after six cards of people sitting in chairs. Come on, Marco.
Yeah, speaking of chairs, I guess one of the things that Dan Scott recently did a card, Doretti, just like, he's sitting in this absolutely like amazing wheelchair. It's like so cool. And like just you can't see it at all. Almost makes you wish like it was upside down. You could just see the wheelchair in the art. His head is behind the text.
Yeah,
super cool. Any other questions?
Between like lands, spells, artifacts, and like creatures or characters, what is your favorite to do?
Creatures. I could do creatures all day, every day, and nothing else.
I'll take a planeswalker.
I love the characters.
Yeah, characters.
I like human characters. I can't do good creatures. So I'm like,
I'll let you know when I get anything more than a tree.
Wait, his modified creature in a chair is what he likes.
Yeah, creatures in chairs, yes.
Are they also the most popular with fans as well? Like the cards they want to have signed are often people or characters?
I think it's just, it has to be a good card.
Yeah. They care more about the mechanics. Yeah. But for print sales, I think they like the characters better, at least in my experience.
I tend to get a lot of colors, like, anybody who's ever come to me, because I suck at colors and I'm like so bright with them, is usually people saying that they liked the color. Like Galari Decoy was like super orange and purple and green, sort of almost cartoony. And I get a lot of people send me that card from all over the world and want me to sign it and send it back to them. So my most colorful cards always end up winning, I guess.
Yes.
What are all your favorite blocks or worlds to have made cards for?
The question was, do any of you have a favorite world?
I love them all. I just love getting that book. That book of like, oh, this is going to be the coolest world.
I like Kamigawa just because it was so different from anything that had ever come before it. You know, I liked the Asian
field. I love Innistrad. I started out on Innistrad, and I still wish I was doing more vampires.
You kicked Innistrad's ass. Yeah, that was a really good set of yours. I remember that.
Thanks.
I like Ravnica quite a bit. I was on the concepting team for the original Ravnica, so kind of got some closeness there, but I love the world too. I like that high fantasy. So.
Any other questions? Yes.
What are your thoughts on MTG art book, and can we get an MTG art book? Like,
that'd be great.
Art book?
We don't have any control over that.
We were just talking about that last night.
Yeah, it's like.
Yeah, we're kind of baffled as to why they don't do art books.
We have it. We get it every time they like make a new book. They like apparently like six guys apparently go sit in the room on the top of a mountain and they in 3 days crank out this book that's like this thick and they mail it to us and it has like everything in there. And the first thing it says is if you ever show this book to anyone or these books ever fall in the wrong hands. I don't know why they won't release them, I guess. Maybe they feel like, because it's kind of quick art a lot.
But
so
even
it's
just
still
a
sick,
they
man.
Shouldn't
well,
do a collection.
Just an art of book that features the art from the cards, but larger.
Larger
every time somebody comes by your booth and they see a print of your art like this, they go, "Oh my goodness! You know, I'm seeing stuff in this I never saw before. There's a little squirrel there, or something. You know what I mean?" And so, that's the kind of thing you'd love to see them do an art book to just reprint these pieces larger for people.
But you know, I've thought about that, and I think one of the reasons why they don't do that is because I think that's part of one of the reasons why magic art stays so fresh. Is because there's not an art book to go to say, this is what I need to paint. Because I feel like if there's an art book and it has like, first of all, how do you put all of the magic pieces in there? You have to choose like the best ones. And then what if a person sees that and then they go to paint and they're like, well, I need it, and it has to look like this. Because then you won't ever get the crazy like, whoa, look at that, you know, like it's.
Well, but I think you're looking at that from our perspective as artists. I think the fans would all probably want to buy one.
Yeah.
I would want to buy one, and I don't really do that much magic work anymore.
Just on every block after the block finish.
Well, I talked to Jeremy about that, and he said that he thought that by the time the book came out and the buzz over that block was over, that the sales would just drop off immediately. But I asked him, why not do by color, like the best of black cards and the best of green, or whatever.
Well, you've got Spectrum, which has quite a bit of it. Then they used to do calendars. I don't know if they still do them anymore. But
I think it's just thousands of cards. They did do one art book back in the day. I mean, what was it?
Invasion.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's very surprising because if you look at video games or movies or whatever, they're always releasing the making of this movie, or they're always very good sellers. It's surprising to me that somebody's going to be love Kamigawa. I cannot get enough Kamigawa. I would totally buy the art book.
Maybe with the movie coming out, they'll
just be a book of art of the movie.
Yeah.
Just recap.
Last question?
Okay. So Magic has a lot of cards that have really weird things going on in them because it's, different creatures and stuff. How do you approach doing something where you might not be able to have reference, so not necessarily a human or a humanoid tree.
How do you find a frill oculus? What is a frill oculus?
You look at the work of other artists and you get inspired. All those people that we mentioned earlier. If you want to get inspired, you go look at other great artists and see what they did for things, how they handled things.
That's my favorite thing to do, is something that I'm not gonna have to look at very strict reference for. I want to make up creatures in that magic universe and just see how far I can push it before they tell me to rein it in.
You can't mess it up either. That's the great thing, because there's no established reference for it. So you know, you're making it up. Someone can't say, "Oh, the proportions are off on that." No, I made it up. That's the way it's supposed to work.
You're like God. You're like, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Artists can be pretty inventive with their reference too, though. We had Adam Paquette sing at our house once, and he needed to build a reference for a cube of slime
or
something.
D&D, right?
Yeah, for D&D. And so we went out and got some little action figures, like G.I. Joe dudes. And Tony had this metal box that he was going to build a synthesizer in. And we got Jell-O, and we made Jell-O with the men in it. And then flip that over, and we had a slime cube.
Yeah.
Sounds awful.
I would have done the same thing.
Frilled Oculus, actually, to answer your question, on Jerry Springer a long time ago, there's this guy that like had no bottom half of his body, and he ran around with his hands. It was his body with a goat eye, with the frills came from those lizards, that the Jesus lizards that walk on the water. So, yeah, I guess like National Geographic / Jerry Springer.
Well, thank you all for coming to the panel today. I really appreciate it. You guys have been a fabulous audience. Please buy lots of art from them this weekend. I'm sure they would really appreciate it. Can we get a round of applause? Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Very much. God, I hope it recorded the whole time. Please say you recorded the whole time.